It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 55 degrees and lightly raining through a foggy mist. Out at the airport, they are showing northwest winds to 5 miles per hour, and they are back down to 3 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain for the rest of the day until about 1 a.m. tonight, in fact. North winds to 10, turning to the east this afternoon, and finally to the southeast tonight, where they might gust as high as 20. Coming up on the Midday Report, Chinook winds gusting 75 miles per hour caused a power outage in the eastern interior. President Joe Biden will be visiting Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage in September. And the company that owns the Pogo gold mine north of Delta Junction would like to renew its permit to discharge processed waste into the nearby river. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. A major hurricane could hit the Tampa Bay area of Florida by midweek. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports Tropical Storm Idalia is expected to strengthen overnight as it moves across the Gulf of Mexico.
Emergency officials say evacuations are underway for barrier islands and low-lying areas along the Florida Gulf Coast. Governor Ron DeSantis says Idalia is expected to rapidly intensify.
We are bracing for a major hurricane impact, Category 3 plus. Hopefully it doesn't get much worse than a Category 3, but the reality is you got basically clear sailing for this thing. You've got waters that are warm, and there's not really going to be much to slow it down.
A major threat will be dangerous storm surge over a wide swath of the Gulf Coast, stretching from Florida's Big Bend to the Tampa Bay region. Debbie Elliott, NPR News.
A federal judge says former President Donald Trump will go to trial in Washington, D.C. on March 4th, 2024, rejecting Trump's request for a 2-year delay. NPR's Carrie Johnson reports.
Judge Tanya Chutkan says she understands Trump's lawyers need time to prepare for the landmark case against a former president, but she says waiting for years after the Capitol riot on January 6, 2021, doesn't serve the public interest. The judge says Trump has known for a year about the investigation into alleged interference in the 2020 election. She set trial for March 4, 2024, shortly before the Super Tuesday primaries. The judge says she consulted with a different jurist in New York who'd been scheduled to oversee a separate hush money case against Trump for later that month. Defense lawyers for Trump say the trial date will hurt his rights to due process. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
Spanish prosecutors have opened an investigation into the president of the country's soccer federation, Luis Rubiales. He could face criminal charges for kissing a player after Spain's national team won the Women's World Cup a week ago. Alan Ruiz Terol has more.
Prosecutors will look into whether Luis Rubiales committed a crime when he kissed the Spanish player Jenny Hermoso on the lips during the World Cup award ceremony. Despite public outcry, Rubiales has refused to step down and threatened legal action against his critics. This prompted the entire World Cup winning squad to abandon the national team until a change of leadership. The International Soccer Federation, FIFA, has suspended Rubiales for 90 days.
Alan Ruiz Cherro reporting. U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo met with Chinese officials today in Beijing. She says the two nations have agreed to exchange information on U.S. export controls. China's complained about security-related limits on access to processor chips and other American technology. The Dow up 213. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Chinook winds gusting up to 75 miles per hour blew across the eastern interior on Saturday, blowing trees into power lines and knocking out electricity for up to 10 hours in an area stretching from North Pole to Tok. The windstorm downed power lines that sparked a dozen small wildfires that crews quickly extinguished. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Gale force winds out of the southwest blasted the eastern interior Saturday, roughly from Isabel Pass to Northway.
The strongest wind that we got was actually down in Isabel Pass, right at the mouth of the pass, and it got to 75 miles an hour.
Fairbanks-based National Weather Service meteorologist Adam Gill says that's also where the highest sustained winds were recorded.
It looked like it touched above 40 miles an hour for about an hour or so.
Gill says the sustained winds died down later Saturday, but overnight they still ranged from 20 to 30 miles per hour with gusts up to 60. Not much damage was reported around the area, however, except by Golden Valley Electric Association.
So we had about 50 different situations where there were trees that had blown into the power lines, and all of those required response from our crews.
Golden Valley spokesperson Meadow Bailey said Sunday that the co-op initially dispatched four crews to chase after the problem, but added two more later in the afternoon as reports kept coming in of downed trees knocking out power from North Pole to Delta Junction.
Our crews were working from about 3 p.m. on Saturday until 6 a.m. Sunday morning to restore all of the outages.
A dozen of those downed or damaged power lines sparked small fires in a couple of the communities hit by the windstorm.
We had approximately 5 power line fires in the Delta area and then about 7 in the Tok area.
Forestry spokesperson Cale Casey says that could have caused major problems if it weren't for last week's rain throughout the area.
We're lucky that we've had this intermittent moisture for the past week that's keeping the tundra and the ground fuels nice and wet.
Even though the warm Chinook dried out a lot of that vegetation, Casey said the situation could have been a lot worse if the area hadn't been dampened enough to keep the fires from spreading. He said none of the fires spread beyond a tenth of an acre.
Thankfully, in all the locations where trees struck power lines, we didn't have rapid fire growth.
He said Sunday that's also because of the quick response to the fire reports by forestry and local fire departments.
Delta Junction City Fire Department, Rural Deltona in our area, and then the Tok Initial Attack Resources and the Tok Volunteers.
Casey says the rash of fires should serve as a reminder that even though it's late in the season, the danger of wildfire remains high.
It's never really over till it's over, and especially in certain areas like this, like Delta Junction, where you can get the winds that can arrive at any time.
Bailey says the weekend's winds also serve as a reminder that property owners can help reduce the chances of a tree on their land getting blown over onto power lines that usually run through the rights of way along the boundaries of their parcel.
We do ask property owners, though, if you are near your right of way and you see trees that are leaning, go ahead and take them down on your own or call and ask somebody to come in and have them removed.
Bailey says that's an ongoing problem that Golden Valley has been dealing with for years. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
President Joe Biden will visit Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage on September 11th to commemorate the 22nd anniversary of the 2001 terrorist attacks. At a press briefing today, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said the visit will happen as the president comes back from a diplomatic visit to Hanoi, Vietnam.
The president will travel from Hanoi to Alaska to participate in a memorial ceremony with members of the military and their families.
White House officials didn't specify how long the president will be in Alaska or if he had any other plans on his itinerary. The Associated Press reported that this will be the first time a president has not attended one of the September 11th observances held annually in New York City, Pennsylvania, or outside Washington, D.C. in Virginia. The president previously stopped at Jay Bear for a brief refueling stop on his way to Japan in May. Biden's visit is one of several high-profile visits from federal officials to Alaska in recent months. First Lady Jill Biden and Interior Secretary Deb Haaland visited Bethel in May, while Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, Attorney General Merrick Garland, and Deputy Interior Secretary Tommy Baudreau toured parts of the state this month. A new proposal from the Matanuska Susitna School Board would significantly weaken the role of the body's student representative. The changes are a big departure from how most other student representatives across the state are included in their local school boards. And as Alaska Public Media's Tim Rocky reports, the board's current representative thinks he's essentially being punished for speaking up on sensitive topics.
The proposal was developed after a contentious school board meeting in May, when the board discussed a Citizens Library Advisory Committee to review books in Mat-Su schools for pornographic content. In several exchanges with board members, student representative Ben Colendo asked pointed questions on the library committee and one other issue. In this exchange, Colendo asks board member Ole Larson why the board would hand-pick citizens to serve on the library committee.
And that's what it says, and that's what we're following.
I understand that, but I'm not arguing.
You know, and that's simply, I'll go ahead and read the whole thing, I guess. No, committee members shall represent. Now listen, committee members.
2 months later, a three-member board policy committee proposed weakening the student member's role. The new policy would remove the ability for the student to cast a preferential vote, the title of board member from the student, and only allow the student to speak once at the beginning of the meeting, or if requested by the board chair. Jacob Butcher is on the policy committee that proposed the changes during a board retreat on August 2nd. Butcher declined to speak with Alaska Public Media, and no other board members responded to requests for comment. But during a recent meeting, Butcher said the student representative was intended as a privilege for the student body.
Like a lot of other good faith efforts, this position is subject to pressures from outside, which I felt like from my remote position is what happened. Unfortunately, that's kind of forced the body to do a restructure in order to effectively and efficiently carry out our business and to maintain the authority.
The school board released a statement in August that says the changes are intended to allow the student member to leave the meeting early and to more closely align with Mat-Su Borough Code. Student member Ben Colendo doesn't think that's accurate. Colendo is a senior at Career Tech High School in Wasilla and the only student advisory board representative ever to be elected to the position twice. He says he plays an important role on the board. Colendo feels that he's being retaliated against for questioning board members.
I always push to bring student voice to question or what they're doing is actually beneficial to students.
The representative is elected by other students in the Mat-Su who participate in student advisory board. The current policy says that the member is allowed to speak on any matter that is not an executive session or related to personnel. Colendo doesn't feel that his comments at the May meeting were out of line.
And I didn't say anything other than I want us to question why we're making this decision. Is it because we think it's best for students or because we think it's best for our political opinions or for our political stance?
All of the five largest school districts in the state and the state school board have at least one student representative, and all are allowed to speak during meetings and cast preferential votes. Felix Myers is a Sitka High School student who serves on both the Sitka School Board and the State Board of Education as a student representative. Myers says that the student member's advisory vote is essential, and removing it would set a concerning precedent.
I think that it is detrimental to the ability of the school board to create the best education possible for its students when it forgets about the voice of those it's actually trying to serve.
When the proposal was introduced to the public, two board members said they support allowing the student to continue to speak at any point during meetings. It would take two more members to defeat the proposal. The board is likely to vote on it at their next meeting on September 6th. In Anchorage, I'm Tim Rocky.
Federal officials met with tribal leaders in Napakiak and Naposhkiak last week as a part of a tour of the state promoting infrastructure funding. In Napakiak, the focus was on the efforts to relocate the village, and $25 million the village received last year under the Biden administration's infrastructure law. White House Infrastructure Coordinator Mitch Landrieu and Deputy Interior Secretary Tommy Baudreau were part of the visit, says Walter Nelson, the Managed Retreat Coordinator for Napakiak.
We have to, you know, high-ranking officials from Washington, D.C. to make a site visit and see firsthand how we do things in rural Alaska.
But he also says the federal grant is only a fraction of what is needed to move the village. The full cost of relocation is estimated to exceed $200 million, according to an interagency managed retreat plan. Nelson says the erosion has been accelerating and that the village's water treatment plant is now just 53 feet from the Kuskokwim River.
There's a lot of buildings, you know, that we can't move, and then the only thing we have to do is, you know, rebuild new ones. And so far we moved two families from the erosion, and we're looking at moving two more, you know, before winter, and we're crossing our hearts that everything will move smoothly.
Napakiak will need to demolish or move dozens of homes and public buildings lying in the path of the erosion, according to the managed retreat plan. It will also need to construct a new well and water treatment plant. In addition to the federal funding, the village has already received nearly $60 million from the state to demolish a section of its school and build a brand new school a safe distance away from the Kuskokwim River. Erosion wasn't the only item on the agenda for Wednesday's visit. They also highlighted $42 million in funding for a fiber optic network connecting Bethel, Platinum, Eek, Napashkiak, and Oscarville. The company that owns the Pogo Gold Mine north of Delta Junction is seeking to renew a state permit that allows it to discharge processed waste into a nearby river. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Northern Star Resources has applied to the State Department of Environmental Conservation to renew a 5-year waste discharge permit for the Pogo Mine. The Australia-based company discharges treated waste from its underground mine, man camps, and other facilities into the Goodpaster River. DEC engineer Tim Pilon says that wastewater is discharged into the river through two outlets or outfalls.
Outfall 1 discharges treated mine drainage water, and outfall 2 discharges treated domestic wastewater.
According to DEC, the waste coming out of outfall 2 includes sewage and gray water. Wastes discharged by outfall 1 include antimony, arsenic, cadmium, copper, iron, lead, manganese, mercury, and zinc.
Those are the defined minerals that are available and show up in water, so those are the ones you got to keep your eye on.
Pilon says Northern Star must monitor treated mine waste for those minerals, and he says they've not exceeded government thresholds. He says the company no longer monitors for cyanide in the wastewater because the toxic chemical hasn't been present in the wastewater in recent years.
Cyanide has been monitored in the past, and it has not shown up.
But it has shown up elsewhere around the mine, like two accidental releases in 2015 and 2016 of a cyanide-containing substance called paste that's used to fill mine shafts. The DEC website doesn't say that Northern Star was sanctioned for those releases, but the company paid a $600,000 federal fine earlier this year for improper handling of other hazardous wastes.
That was kind of an arcane sort of distinction that was made in that whole issue.
Pilon says that fine was levied for a violation of a different federal law, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. The permit that Northern Star wants to renew is one required by the Federal Clean Water Act. The EPA first issued the permit in 2004 to one of the partners that developed the mine, Vancouver-based Tech Cominco, but DEC's been issuing them since then. And Pilon says there's been little or no concern expressed over that renewal in recent years.
This permit's been rolled over so many times, and there have been, initially, there were lots of public meetings and things like that, but on the renewals, there's been little or no interest.
No public meetings are scheduled for this year's wastewater discharge permit renewal, but a public notice issued by DEC says anyone interested in the agency holding one can request that before September 9th. That's also the deadline for submitting public comments on the permit renewal. You can find out how to ask for a meeting or comment on the permit by going to the DEC website and searching for Pogo Discharge Permit Renewal. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Zucchini Fest, an afternoon of races and a parade centered around the popular summer squash, was hosted by the Homer Farmers Market over the weekend. KBBI's Jamie Deep reports on the first Zucchini Fest since 2019.
Joey Lothian leads the crowd through races for a familiar festival that returned to the Homer Farmers Market last Saturday. Tents sheltered families from the rain as they gathered to build race cars for Zucchini Fest. The only catch? The cars needed zucchinis attached to them, which could be purchased in the market. Tubs filled with toy cars, ribbons, duct tape, rubber bands, figurines, and more sat ready for people to use. Luce Ratterman, one of more than 10 racers, took full advantage of the supplies provided.
I have two trolls, a tiger, an entire roll of tape, two seashell necklaces, control panels in the car that I kind of want.
After assembling their cars, the market held a parade where they crowned the Zucchini Queenie, the event's version of a fair queen. Zuba Dorval, the 2019 queen, led the parade around the market and crowned Jennifer Castellani as this year's queen, donning her with a crown and cape. After the parade, people gathered around the racetrack as two competitors released their cars at a time. Rebecca Ross and Liam James stood at the side as Zucchini car field medics, carrying toppled cars away on a stretcher. Susan Miller is one of the organizers of the event. She's been involved with the farmers market for over 20 years with her husband. She said the wet summer weather made it unclear if they would be able to hold Zucchini Fest in the first place.
This year, we didn't know if we were going to do Zucchini Fest until, I think, like 3 weeks ago, because there weren't any zucchinis, because it's been so wet, but we pulled it off at the last minute.
Lauren Giroux, director of the Homer Farmers Market, said that the annual event is one of many that were canceled for numerous years due to the COVID-19 pandemic. But they're hoping to bring back more events in future years.
Every summer since COVID, the market has gotten a little bigger, you know, more vendors, and we've stayed busy. And so it's really exciting to see that energy coming back.
At the end of the races, every competitor is a winner and walks away with a gift certificate for the farmers market. The Homer Farmers Market will continue to run until the end of September, with some vendors remaining until October 28th. In Homer, I'm Jamie Deep.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. GCI is a participant in the Affordable Connectivity Program, providing qualifying Alaska households entry-level broadband internet. More information at gci.com/ACP.
Consistent message at the Federal Reserve's Annual Economic Forum. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute. Fed Chair Jerome Powell and Christine Lagarde of the European Central Bank say interest rates are not coming down anytime soon. At Jackson Hole over the weekend, they emphasized the need to shrink inflation to 2%, dispelling speculation that central banks might tolerate a higher rate. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo is in Beijing and has agreed with Chinese officials to open up new channels of communication over trade issues. Those include an information exchange about U.S. trade restrictions on advanced chips due to national security concerns. Unionized workers at Detroit's three major automakers have voted to authorize a strike. There's a September 14 deadline to reach a new labor agreement. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 28th day of August, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:01. It will set again at 9:18. That will give us 14 hours and 17 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 50 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 81 degrees. That was set in 1930. And our record low is 35 degrees, set in 1998. Presently 55 degrees. There's a light rain and a foggy mist that's been hanging around all day. Out at the airport, they are showing northwest winds to 5 miles per hour, and they are down to 3 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain for the rest of the afternoon and until about 2 a.m. tonight. North winds to 10 miles per hour today, turning to the east, and then finally to the southeast tonight, gusting as high as 20 tonight. For tomorrow, a 30% chance of rain, mainly before 11. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 60 and southeast winds to 10. Well, let's check in with a brand new announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with revised Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 39, date issued 10 a.m. on August 28th. The The following areas will be extended from 6 p.m. Monday, August 28th until further notice. The Duck Bay, Izuit Bay, and Outer Katoy Bay sections of the Afognak District. The following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 6 p.m. Tuesday, August 29th. The Anton Larson, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Spiriton Bay, and Zacher Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon, Wednesday, August 30th, to 6 p.m. Friday, September 1st in the following areas. In the Inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Northwest Afognak and Raspberry Strait sections of the Afognak District, the Mainland District, and the Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Mosher Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Wednesday, August 30th until 6 p.m. Friday, September 1st in the following areas. At Karluk Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline, stream number 255101. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Outer Iakulik, Outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District. The Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Uyak Bay and Inner Uganic Bay sections, remain closed, and the remaining Inner Bay sections will close at 6 p.m. Tuesday, August 29th. The Northeast Kodiak District, the East Side Kodiak District, the Humpy Dead Man section of the Alatak District, and the Southwest Afognak and Northeast Afognak sections of the Afognak District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the stream terminus at Molina Creek, stream number 252105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak District south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purseine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart, detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles offshore. Small craft advisory through tonight, northeast 25 today, becoming southeast 25 tonight, 6-foot seas building to 7 feet tonight, and for tomorrow, southeast 20 and 5-foot seas on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory today, northeast 25 today and seas to 7 feet, east 20 tonight with 5-foot seas, and southwest 20 tomorrow, and 5-foot seas on our west side. Looking at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide will be at 1:24 this afternoon, just about an hour. That will be a 6.6-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 6:21 p.m. of 2.9 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 1:45 this afternoon and be 11.7 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 7:19 p.m. of 3.8 feet. Tide poolers, we do have a significant minus tide tomorrow morning. That will happen at 7:34 here on the east side, just about time to appreciate the sunrise, and be minus 1.1 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 8:04 and be minus 2.4 feet tomorrow morning. Asphalt milling and paving work is ongoing on Mission Road. It began today, and they're going to be working 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. until the work is done. The work is weather-dependent, so please watch for signage. There will be a pilot car operation during the work hours. The pilot car will run from approximately lot number 615 to Spruce Avenue. That includes the intersection of Mission Road and 12th Avenue, as well as Ismailoff Street. Parking on the street is prohibited while the work is undergoing, and residents within the work zone are encouraged to park outside the zone during these times. Also, on paving day, residents will want to park away from the work zone so they are not restricted access due to hot asphalt. Once the paving starts, they will not be able to get vehicles across the asphalt until late afternoon. Because the paving is weather-dependent, a second notice will be sent out to local residents with the paving date. And if you can at all, just don't even drive on Mission Road until they're finished with that work. Use an alternate route. And watch for equipment, workers, flaggers, and signage. The Senior Citizens of Kodiak Board of Directors will be meeting on Wednesday at 1 p.m. in the multipurpose room. And the Finance Committee will meet that morning at 11 in the multipurpose room to review the FY24 budget. At the 1 p.m. board meeting, Hella Spellman, the accreditation on-site reviewer, will be meeting with the board and asking questions about the self-assessment process.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.